Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I am still your host, Jason, and today I am pumped about this episode. Coming to us all the way from Kittery, Maine, we have the co-founder and CEO of Good to Go, Jen. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason.
All right, before we jump into the episode, I was doing some research, and I've got to hear this. I love stories. So you were involved in the first trio of all women on the Iron Chef program, and you guys won.
Yep. We beat Mario Batali. He left crying.
No, yeah? No. So how does this all come about?
Yeah, so I owned a restaurant with my business partner, Anita Lowe. She was the chef and I was the front of the house. I had been cooking for years. We were going to co-chef and we realized we'd kill each other. So I got my sommelier certificate so I was the wine buyer. I was the general manager. And one summer, we brought a bunch of corn from Long Island back to the city. And Anita did a corn tasting, like a 4-course corn meal on every dish. And that same night, one of the producers for Iron Chef came in and was like, oh my God, like, this is so Iron Chef. He said, would your chef ever consider being on Iron Chef? And I knew it, she would. So I asked her and she's like, yeah, definitely. She came out and talked to him. And then, a few months went by, they signed us up. We were all ready to go. And Anita was adamant about me actually being on it. And I was like, Anita, have your kitchen staff. She's like, I'll have Sawa, who is the sous chef, but I want you. And I was like, oh God, please don't make me do this. I'm super nervous and super shy. And I couldn't even fathom doing that. So needless to say, all the producers, all the on-air people came to dinner to the restaurant the night before, and I'm all dressed up and I'm serving them wine and I'm whining and dining them, and they love the place. Next day we go to the studio and I'm literally, my lips are blue. I have to pee every 2 minutes. I remember, I think it was Kevin, the floor reporter, came by and he's like, how you doing? And I'm like, I'm so nervous. He was like, oh my God, last night you were like amazing. I'm like, that's my environment. This is not. Needless to say, once they hit go, then it was all competition. And that's where I'm like, okay, I had to forget that I'm terrified. And so we did it. 60 minutes later, the chef that reigned supreme was Chef Anita Lowe and Team Anissa. It was really exciting and it was really fun. Although we signed an NDA and we couldn't say who won for, I think it was like 5 months. And we walked back into the restaurant and of course we had to do dinner service. We got back in at like 6 o'clock and everyone's like, how did you do? And you know, we said, oh, we can't say. And my friend Aaron, who was worked for me at the time, he goes, look at their faces. What do you think? And we're like, so, yeah.
So after all that stress, you had to go back and work the restaurant?
We were tiny little, I mean, it's kind of like good to go now. It's like we tiny little restaurant. We had dinner service. Oh, yeah.
One question to that. You got 5 minutes before go time backstage, or you're walking out to the cutting board, the stoves. What's going through your mind?
Oh, God. Well, I think it's what Anita said to me, which was, Jen, I really want to win. And I just was like, oh, of course you do. Of course you do. Like, as if doing it alone wasn't enough pressure. Now we had to win. But, you know, we always went in knowing we wanted to win. So I was like, all right, you know, so, and we did. And she's an amazing chef. So like her stuff is like over the top. She's actually an investor in the company. So it's good to know she's supporting me and the company as well.
I saw that and I was like, oh, I have to ask this and get the story. That's awesome. So first and foremost, I want to personally thank you from all the people that I hike and backpack with, all our listeners. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for bringing excitement to the backcountry. No more eating cardboard at campsite. It's wonderful meals. And I know you probably hear that a lot, but truly thank you for seeing the emptiness in this part of our lifestyle and fulfilling it, because
well, thank you.
You guys are rocking it.
I think what happened is I met my husband in 2008, and he's an avid outdoorsman. You know, one year he said he slept under the stars like 200, maybe 200 plus nights, and just loved hiking, backpacking, everything about it. Shared his passion with me. I loved it too, but everything but the food. And basically, and this was 2008. And so it wasn't until we started doing much longer hikes, like a week out, that I couldn't just bring, you know, stuff for an overnight that was yummy and delicious. So I started fooling around with my tabletop dehydrator and made just my comfort food, which ended up actually the first time we took it out to the Adirondacks, I did it for a week of food and I never tested the rehydration of it. And I was like, wow, gosh, I really should have tested that at home. It worked. So that's okay. But it's really was back, you know, what are we talking, like 17 years ago, there was not much out there. And it wasn't until 2013 that we decided, like, maybe we should try this as a business. And so we looked into who was out there and the competition. And you know, it, as one friend said, the bar was very low. And that was back then, there, you know, even the bigger brands, high in sodium, a lot of additives and preservatives. And I have to say, over the last whatever, we've been doing this 11 years, everybody has really gotten the memo and stepped up their game and just really started using more whole ingredients. Like, what, you know, I'm sure the preservatives and the additives were for shelf stability and to make things cheaper, but people know that now and people read labels and people care. Nope. So there's, you know, when we started, there was probably 5 major brands and now there's probably 30, but it's nice that we were definitely looking at your title. We were trailblazers for all natural dehydrated meals. And I'm excited about that. And I don't want to, you know, turn the mantle down to anybody else. We got to keep plugging along and coming up with cool new stuff as well.
And let me tell you, when we get to the end of the podcast, I have a I have an idea of a meal for you. So
okay, I'm up for. I listen to everything. Some things don't dry well. So when people give me ideas and I know that it won't work, I do this very politely. Wow, that's a really neat idea.
So you're warning me if you say that. I'm like, all right, this is no chance.
I don't know, maybe just a little bit.
Yeah. So what I started doing over the last month or so is, this is to me the most fun, and I got a lot of positive feedback from the listeners. We do a lightning round. So as the listeners know, you have no idea what I'm about to ask you. You've never seen these questions. And for me, I use it like it kind of breaks the ice. You know, we have some fun with it and get to know a little bit more about you. So are you ready?
Yes. Can I swear on your podcast?
Oh, absolutely. This is a Texas podcast.
Okay. Because I'm like, well, lightning being like, I swear a lot. So.
Absolutely. And hey, yeah.
My dad was a sailor. What can I say?
That's right. It's a Texas hiking podcast. We allow a lot. So. All right. On the trail, is your go-to sweet or savory?
Savory.
First thing you crave after a long backpacking trip?
A beer.
One ingredient you would sneak into every trail meal if you could?
Oh, wow. I don't know how I'm just thinking chocolate, but I only have one meal that has chocolate in it.
Hey, you could add it. It could be an answer.
No, I'm that's it. I'm sticking with chocolate. Yep.
I love it.
Either that or mushrooms. And I'd lose a lot of, I love mushrooms. Chocolate or mushrooms.
Most overrated trail snack.
Gosh, overrated. You know, I'm gonna go with Gorp. Like I like nuts. I like raisins. I like chocolate. I don't altogether. My husband, he guzzles it. I mean, we make a bag and he's, but for me, I'm kind of like, just give me some cashews.
Mine's beef jerky.
Oh, see, love that.
Yeah. I love beef jerky, just not on trail. I like this question because you guys are right on the coast. So best environment to really test a new recipe, in the mountains or coastal trails?
Oh, mountains for sure.
What's one kitchen utensil you secretly wish you could bring backpacking?
Oh, I have this beautiful spoon that was given to me by the past pastry chef of the White House, Bill Yosef.
Oh, wow.
And it's a gray Kuntz spoon. And I love it. And every once in a while, my husband might put it in the wrong drawer and I kind of freak out secretly without, I'm like, where's my spoon? And it's just like an oversized spoon, too right. big to hike with, but I love it.
Is it dishwasher safe?
It is dishwasher safe.
All right.
It is.
Instant coffee, a trail necessity or trail tragedy?
I like it. I do the Starbucks Via. Love it.
All right. I love this question. I did the same thing with Hilltop Packs about sewing and sticking themselves with needles. But if you look at your time as a chef and up until now, if you had a dime for every time you cut yourself, what could you buy?
A candy bar.
Candy bar. All right. So you're pretty good with a knife.
Yeah.
Most underrated flavor combo in outdoor meals.
Most underrated flavor combo?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, underrated. Huh. I think like sweet and savory together, but I think that's not underrated. I don't know. That's hard. I don't like that question.
All right.
I could tell you what, like, I don't like, but.
All right. What's that?
Desiccated coconut. Hate it.
You get one trail meal forever. What is it going to be?
You mean my own? Or
it's up to you.
I could eat our chicken pho every single day. And in fact, I do sometimes. I go at stretches and they give me a fish tub. I don't know. Only restaurant people would know what a fish tub is. It's kind of like 12, 14 by 6 by 12. And I'm like, don't pack it in the bags. Just give me a fish tub and I keep it up here and I eat it that way.
I love it.
Not buy the fish tub. I measure it out.
Yeah, for sure.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Dream hike or backpacking trip that is currently on your bucket list?
And we're going to do it. We're going to Hawaii in October. And my cousin is doing her 25th Ironman. She qualified for Kona. So we're going to cheer her on. And then we're going over to Kauai and we're going to hike in Kauai. So I'm so excited.
Nice. Here's some would you rather questions. Would you rather rehydrate a meal by cold soaking or hike an extra mile to get access to boiling water?
Boiling water.
All right. Would you rather forget your spoon or your stove on a backpacking trip?
Spoon.
All right. Would you rather have your backpacking meals praised by Gordon Ramsay, but hikers are not a fan, or loved by hikers and Gordon calls it rubbish?
The second.
All right. So would you rather launch a new trail meal and it's an instant cult hit, but it's not your favorite, or launch a meal that you love and it barely sells?
I the latter, but I know that I have to be, to keep my business open, I have to do the first. I mean, AKA the Bib and Bop. I thought it was hilarious and funny and we no longer make it. So there you go. I am an old dog, but I can learn some things.
All right. I hear that. Would you rather taste test 15 versions of a new curry recipe in one sitting or field test the same curry for 5 days on a backpacking trip?
15 in one sitting.
Last lightning round question. This is tradition. No pressure, but it does dictate how this episode is going to go and the duration. What is your favorite of all time Texas hiking podcast that you've been a guest on?
Well, I'm so excited to tell you, and I think you might even be shocked, but it's Trailblazing Texas Podcast.
I love it. I've been asking that question for about 3 months now, and I'm batting 1,000. So it warms my heart as a host.
You're doing a great job. I mean, people are really, they understand your hard work, your diligence. Well deserved. Well deserved.
I appreciate it. All right. So let's get into Good to Go and the story. I know you've said the story 1,000 times, but I love stories. So I think first and foremost, it's important to me that our listeners, our hiking and backpacking community, you know, really understand how can they and what is the best way for them to connect with the wonderful things that you're doing, being a social media presence, any of that stuff that you can share with the listeners.
I think probably the best way to learn more about Good to Go is really through our social media, mostly our Instagram. We brought on this wonderful woman, Kristen Murphy, 2.5 years ago, and she has really developed a presence and on social media, on Instagram. But her stories, you know, of course, there's lots of pictures of people hiking in the mountains, eating our food. Of course, that makes perfect sense. But you know, I sent her the picture of my new puppy that I got 1.5 weeks ago, and I was like, "It's International Dog Day." So you're going to see stuff like that. And you're going to see one of our employees, Julia Henry, she's painting. It's hard to explain, but like where crosswalks are in town so that people slow down in this area. And there are these beautiful murals. And so we'll probably have a post on that when the murals are done. So like you learn about not only what we sell and who we sell to and all those beautiful vistas, but also like who the company is. So, you know, there's 19 of us. We are the manufacturers. So I really do love when has the posts of walking around the kitchen and everybody's got their hairnets on. But I mean, that's the reality. We're not a marketing firm that comes up with meals and then have somebody else make them. Like I've got a whole crew, which has been, I can't do this alone. That's for sure.
Right.
That is great. And you meet the crew.
I've talked to Kristen a few times. She does an amazing job with the social media presence. And it's exactly what I told Ben at Hilltop Packs. I'm like, the reason why I'm connected with what you guys do, and the same with Good to Go, is you quickly get an understanding that you're real people in a real community. And I would even probably argue the point that that's almost as more important than, you know, than creating an awesome meal is supporting that community, showing everybody that, hey, we're just normal people. We're not, like you say, we're not ran by some social media company I don't know if I'm saying it right, but it's refreshing. It's real people. And you know immediately every penny that I spend with Good to Go, Trekker Joe's, Trail Brush, Hilltop Packs, is going to support this community, these real families, these, dance lessons and all this kind of stuff. So
absolutely.
She does a great job. So, tell her after this that.
No, she is amazing. And thank you for supporting the company, because it really is, I'm not retiring anytime soon. I'm a pretty I'm not the highest paid employee Good to Go by far, but I am the team leader and the chief morale and R&D. And so it's great to have everybody here that's on the same page with us. I think that it's really important to have the love and the people that really care about the food. They love food. We have a few people that have been in the restaurant business, so I appreciate their honesty with my meals. Yeah, it's a good crew. I love them all.
Nice. So just a quick funny story of how I got introduced to Good to Go. So my heaven on earth is the Guadalupe Mountain National Park. It's in West Texas. It's 9 of the highest peaks in Texas are there. Over 8,000 feet. It's not a Colorado, but it's a blast.
That's decent.
So there were some adventures that I had planned that one of my best friends, he's up in Washington State, John, him and his wife came to kind of help me conquer some of these things. Cause some of the stuff you need an experienced person. So we're at Pine Springs and we're hunkered down in our tents. He's got this four-season monstrosity, something you'd probably take to Everest. And I'm in my first backpacking tent I spent like $80. And there was in the quads, the wind is horrible. It's 80, 90, 100 miles an hour at times. Yeah, it's crazy. And so we were having a high wind storm, and it was predicted probably a sustained wind 30 to 40 miles with gust up to 50, 60 miles an hour through the camp. So I'm sitting there in the tent, we're just waiting. And, and I don't hear discussions about safety or what are we going to do if this or that. I hear a debate about who's getting the mushroom risotto. And so my thought was, they cooked mushroom risotto and brought it on the plane or dehydrated and brought it on the plane all the way down here. And then I'm just thinking, like, we're fixing to have this hellacious storm and they're debating about, and it's not an argument. It's a debate about who's getting the mushroom risotto. No, you had it last time. No, you had it last time. Remember? And so I'm like, John, are you guys really talking about a backpacking meal? And they're like, yeah, I had it or you had it or whatever. Anyway, I don't know how it worked out. I don't know who got the mushroom risotto. And he said, yeah, have you ever heard of Good to Go? And I'm like, I haven't. And we're yelling this through tents, the wind's going to crush us. I'm like, no. And he goes, oh man, you have to try it. They are the absolute best. And I'm like, okay. So 3 or 4 months go by. I think It was probably in January. It's my birthday. I get gift cards to a big box store that supports backpacking stuff. So I'm like, oh, I'll go spend these. So I went there and I'm like, oh, I can go try out those meals that John was talking about. So I'm walking into the store and I'm texting him like, hey, what was that company that made those meals? I have a gift card. I'm going to buy some. So I'm just kind of standing at the front of the store. He's not texting back. So I'm like, oh, I'm just going to go see if I can find something. It's funny. Your packaging led me to you guys at the first. So you had all these dehydrated meal companies, you know, all stacked up, but your packaging, that was the first dehydrated meal. I was like, oh, look how cool this looks. And walked up to it. And the first package, the purple package that was in my face was mushroom risotto. And probably about 5 minutes after that, he, you know, texted back, oh yeah, the company is good to go. And so I haven't turned back since. And that's just, it's to me a really funny story that I'm in the backcountry about to get clobbered by wind. And I'm hearing a debate on who's getting the mushroom risotto.
Well, I have to give a shout out to my friend Dylan Haig, who we are friends now, but he was the designer of the packages. And we hired him to do our brand. This is in 2013. And he knew nothing about the outdoor space or about dehydrated meals, freeze-dried meals. So he did his research, and then we sat down with him, I don't know, like a couple weeks later, and he's like, okay, first of all, do you like this craft paper bags? And my husband and I are, you know, consider ourselves a little bit of hippies, and we're like, of course we do. It looks so, yeah. He's like, yeah, everybody does that. That's not you. And we're like, okay. then he asked us a bunch of questions about, like, do you like humor? So I don't know if you know, on the back of the bag, it's like, notice how many you can pronounce. Like, he was the one that came and, you know, think how big the universe is. Like, all of his little snarky stuff that we've been completely ripped off on, which is fine. Obviously, flattery, biggest compliment. But it was one of those things that he was like, and I think you need to punch it with colors. So I don't know if you can see in the background behind me, those are our first three bags.
No way.
They're hilarious, right? These things I'm holding them up, they're what, I don't know, 12 inches by 6 inches. They're space, like space silver. And then we had these big stickers made. And we stickered all the bags because we couldn't afford to have custom made bags for us. But he did such a good job, and I loved his logo with the little trail map on it. And one point he had a slide in the brand development of a white van with that and the trail going around it. And my husband and I are like, oh yeah, we're getting a van.
Nice.
So he is amazing. We now do all the stuff in house. He was the developer of the brand and the image for the brand. So
he nailed it. And I think probably the beauty of it is he didn't know the space. And so, you know, he had no limitations. And if you look at a lot of the packaging, it doesn't stand out. It's just kind of like, whoa.
Yeah.
And that your packaging brought me to that. And it's just funny that mushroom risotto, that purple, was just right there. And that's how I was like, oh my God, I think I found it. And then John goes, yeah, that's the company.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you.
There's a lot of backpacking meals. When you're in the backcountry, I don't take my readers. Mm-hmm. So when I'm trying to remember how much water or how this or how to do that, because I don't want to mess it up, I can't read the packaging. And on yours, I can.
Well, that's good. But let me give you a trick. And you should try this now. Take your glasses off.
Okay.
Get something that you can't read. Make a pinhole with your hand, you know, like hold your pinhole, super pinhole, and then look through it and you can read.
Are you kidding me?
You
can.
You can. A friend of mine does eye work, and she said, like, do this. And literally, I was once at I had driven like a half hour to our storage unit. This is years ago when we had one, we were in between houses, and I got there and I didn't have my contacts in and I didn't have my readers, and I'm looking at the lock and I couldn't tell you what the number was at all. And I'm like, holy shit, I just drove a half hour for this. And then I remembered the pinhole, and I did the pinhole and I could do it. So like, thank you. I'm glad you could read it, but under duress, you are not blind anymore.
So to the listeners, that actually works. And when she says pinhole, it literally is a pinhole and you can actually read.
It is pretty spectacular.
But with that being said, buy Good to Go Meals, because then you don't have to pinhole. What happens if you fell and hurt your hand and you can't make a pinhole? You want that meal that you can turn over to the back and read it. And so, you know, I've done mushroom risotto, white bean chili, and I bought the pad thai because I was doing some research, had it for lunch 2 or 3 days ago, made a post about it. And that was it. I turned it over and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can read this without my glasses. That it may not seem like a big thing for all the listeners that are under 50, but over 50 listeners, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a hard day when I realized I didn't go out with my readers, and my husband's 9 years younger than me. And he'll be like, mm-hmm. Okay, here, let's look at the map and we're going to go here and we're going to, and I'm like, oh God, I don't know what I'm looking at. So yeah. Yep.
So diving into the episode, we kind of talked about what inspired you to start Good to Go, and you know, kind of, it was the lack of excitement in the backpacking meal. How do you think your background as a professional chef shaped your vision on what backcountry meals could be?
Well, I came at it not as a food scientist. I even to this day, we send things out to the lab. We have our nutrition facts done by a company. But I come at it purely from a chef, starting like with, okay, well, I want a little sweetness in there, which means I'm going to have some caramelized onions, and then I'd like a little kick. So I also believe that if I'm making something, say like the Thai curry, I used to buy these cans of curry, which are a quick, easy cheat to make Thai curry. You know, you get coconut milk, you have that, you have some fish sauce, a little brown sugar, you're good. But I'm like, well, if I'm going to make a curry, I've got to make the curry base from scratch. So that took me, oh gosh, I can't remember. Oh, I remember. It took me months because I kept waffling and changing it. And my husband's like, Jen, we're going to release the product. You have to nail this and get it done. And finally, we had like 15 people over to Good to Go, which was at the time just this little Cape house. And we tried it, and everybody chose which one they wanted. And my favorite one won out, which is great. And today, that's our Thai curry. So it's all about, now I know how things dry. But in the past, it was like, how do I just make the food be the best? I want it to be, one, it should be bowl food. So I will never have lasagna, because you can't put lasagna in a bag. And I'm too literal that way. My brain is like, so everything I create is like, it belongs in a bowl, which it does. And the other thing is really just trying to go as clean as possible. There's so many delicious, wonderful foods out there. And there's no reason that you can't just have fresh vegetables. Although, you know, here I joke around Good to Go where fresh things come to die. So all the fresh stuff comes in, we cook it all, we dry it 18 hours later. It's like cat food. But, you know, I mean, that's the process. And I've learned the process, obviously, after 11 years. I now know mentally how things, even before I even start R&D on anything, I'm like, oh, that would never work, or that would work really well. So I know the process of what we're doing, but I still come at it. Like right now I'm working on a new meal, and I go and I just make it, you know, at home, or and then have everybody try it to say, like, okay, this is the flavor profile I'm looking for this meal. What do you guys think? Yeah, and they'll give me, you know, two thumbs up or needs a little this. Okay, I'll go back to the, and then once I've created the actual meal, then I go and deconstruct it and turn it into a good to go meal.
Well, so what I hear, and to the listeners, and I think this is what separates you guys, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I hear that these meals are put together from your heart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know that that's, you get that any other backpacking meals.
Well, I mean, I think I really have to love the meal in order to develop it. I mean, I eat a lot of it, and we continue to eat it. It's not as if once I create a meal, I don't eat it. Every single day, whatever we've cooked that day and dried, we try the batch before it's completely mixed and before. So it's like we're constantly eating this over and over just to make sure that it's staying the same. So I really have to love it.
No.
Otherwise, I'll be like, oh my God, please don't bring that to me.
So how long does it take to go from like a concept to bagging the first meal?
The concept is never really shared with the staff until I know it will work. And the concept could be in my head for like a year. I'll walk around and think, like, when I come up with a lot of food ideas when I'm hiking, because I'm like, what would I like now? What would be good now? But once I start the R&D, which is basically the process I told you, I cook it from scratch and then I kind of break it down and figure out how to, it could be a good to go meal. Not really that long, not, you know, a couple months. I work alone. So I have Julia Henry, who is our purchaser. She helps me with, product sourcing. I have been known to create meals that we can't find ingredients for. So that's been challenging. Yeah. My original idea for the granola was to have it completely vegan, and I could not, and I still don't think it exists, powdered almond milk. So like without any sugar or additives, or just because they do this cool process where they shoot liquids into, I think it's like 1,000 or 2,000 degrees, and the liquid falls to the ground in powder form. So they do it.
Whoa.
It's spray drying. So they'll do that for like tomato powder. They'll spray in tomato and it'll just drop. It'll be powder. They still haven't done that with almond milk. So that's the one challenging thing is I get like, oh, I want this ingredient. I'm like, oh, it doesn't exist. So is there some things that are better if I can get them dried? Like we used to cook and dry all the arborio for the risotto. It was okay. It was never great. And it was an arduous process. I think sometimes it was chalky, didn't love it. And it took about, I don't know, 2 years of our past purchaser to find arborio rice that was infantized. Jeez. And we still have only one source, and it's delicious. It's amazing. But yeah, so I now know, like, try and not get things that are so esoteric.
So this kind of leads into the next question. Mm-hmm. Were there any major mistakes that you've made when you first entered the outdoor food industry besides creating something that you can't get ingredients for?
Well, I think our first process is we had these, they were called the Harvest Saver, and that was the dryer. And they had these monster sized trays. I want to say they were like 42 by 36, 32. So there's no like 3-bay sink that you could even get them in to scrub them clean. And they had these liners that you had to like scrub the liners and hang them. And they were just these like, and it dried it very unevenly. So you had to pull the trays out and manipulate, like kind of mix it while it's drying. We had those for, I want to say, like a year or two. And I was like, oh no. So I think it was we ended up getting a dryer that's made here in Maine. It was actually developed for the kiln industry, drying wood. And they started using that same process in some food manufacturing in the East Coast. So I drove to a couple places and saw how they work and saw the process and was like, okay, that's great. So we literally just load up all our trays. We roll it in 12 racks. We shut the door and open it 18 hours later and it's done. Whoa. So there it's, and the trays are normal size. So like it's a much better process. So I think that was probably the first like, oh wow, have I just developed a meal and a process that is going to, you know, I'll never keep staff because they'll be like, this sucks. I'm out of here. Scrubbing those trays. No way.
So your meals are for sure known for tasting like real food, not just trail fuel. Do you find that, I don't know how to word this, is it hard to balance what you want to deliver with flavors and wonderful meals versus the realities of backcountry cooking?
Meaning backcountry, like people literally cooking from scratch in the backcountry or just?
No, just like meal wise, like, you right. know, they don't have, you know, like maybe some of the ingredients don't dehydrate or rehydrate right. well or right. you know, some of those kind of limitations that we have.
Yeah. Like I've had to do workarounds on certain things. I like the, when I created the pad thai, I really wanted big pieces of shrimp in there, but there was nobody, you know, I could get dehydrated shrimp and we do get dehydrated shrimp from Louisiana, but we get it now and like it's flaked. You'd have to boil it for like 2 hours for it to come back. Like it just didn't work.
Yeah.
So I think there are those limitations. And I try to set my creativity and the company's ability to sell something, you know, set it up for success. So if there's something that I think like, I'd really like to do this, but it just won't work, then I'm like, you know what? Maybe we just save that for home.
No.
You know? So although I have to say, there's one of my favorite dinners is for a big group of people. And this was actually introduced to me, like from one of my coworkers, Justin Hagen, is to do a summer roll night. So you have like, you know, someone grills chicken, there's all sliced chicken, then there's carrots and cucumbers and cilantro, and then a big bowl of peanut sauce, and everybody hand dips their summer rolls or the rice paper in, and then you make your own summer roll. My husband's notorious to overfill it and they kind of explode, which makes me laugh. And every time I want to say like, David, that's too much. And then it explodes and I'm like, hee. But that whole process, that whole meal that, which was so fun for me, was our new peanut chicken salad. Cause I was like, I was like, I love the peanut sauce. I love the chicken, you know, that. So I actually, my second favorite meal is that, and I'll make that here at work. And then I'll take some rice papers and I'll fill it in. I might make some vermicelli noodles or cut up a cucumber or put some cilantro in there. And I'll have summer rolls, fresh, like peanut chicken salad, summer rolls with no effort, like none.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't even have to boil water. It's just add water, just tap water. And I'm like, it's ready. So
wow. So speaking of your pad thai, that was the meal, I think I said earlier, that I bought. The other meals that I've tried from Good to Go, absolutely love them, but you don't find them anywhere else, right? It's you guys have those meals. But pad thai, I think everybody has.
Yeah.
So I bought the pad thai and my thought was, okay, I can really compare because I've had pad thai with other meals. Your pad thai was spectacular. I'm not a chef. I have no idea what I'm about to say makes sense, but this is just my experience. You know, when you go to a really nice Italian restaurant and the noodles are just different, they have that firmness, but not firm.
Yep.
That pad thai, every time I took a bite, you could feel the noodles have that firmness and they would release when your teeth would bite into it. Oh, it was spectacular. And for sure, your pad thai, hands down, is the absolute best. Even Thai restaurants right down the street, I would rather have your pad thai than what they're producing.
The fun thing about the pad thai was, you know, that was much more when we first started. And I was so adamant about having the ingredients be in what I normally make with pad thai. So pad thai, I don't use ketchup. I use tamarind sauce. I put in carrots. I use shrimp. I use like the dried, we get it from Louisiana, dried shrimp chopped up, you know, peanuts, just everything that you, when you read the package, as I'm like sitting here, I'm like, okay, what else is in there? Like fish sauce, which we have in the curry fish sauce, because that was an early development. And when it cooks, one of our neighbors said, you have like, when you make the, like a pasta marinara or something, I said, yeah. They go, oh my God, that smells so good. You make something that smells like really bad. And I said, yeah, that's the curry, because of the like 5 gallons of fish sauce that goes into it. So the pad thai actually was able to source fish salt, which has all the same flavor profiles. But you know how, do you ever get fish sauce?
Every once in a while, like
if it sits around, it develops these like kind of crystals in the bottom of the container, and that's fish salt. So, I'm constantly trying to take water out of our meals so that we can, you know, have a dry meal. So this was a really great ingredient that I was able to find. So, yeah, I mean, I think everything, I don't want people to read the back of something and be like, why is that in that? You know, like it doesn't make sense. Like what, you would never have that in that meal. And so it should, to me, it should read like a recipe.
And to the listeners, you probably just read the ingredients off the back of the pad thai, and you probably didn't even need your readers.
Right. No. Yeah.
What do you think has been the most difficult meal recipe to adapt for dehydrating?
I think it was the risotto. We did a total redo of it probably 3 years in. It just was, like I said, our first process, we actually made risotto. Like, no joke. It was little batches at the time, but like 100 pounds, more than that, like 200 pounds of mushrooms, cook that down and make mushroom broth. Like, and then we'd have that on the side in another stove, and in the kettle, we'd caramelize onions and put in garlic, and then add the rice and slowly stirring it, adding in this broth. So we'd make, and then we'd add in the pesto, and it was delicious at that moment. But anyone that knows risotto is like, when it's ready, it's ready. And if you don't eat it then, it's wheat paste. So even at a restaurant, you could get it, and it sat too long or cooked too long. It's horrible. So it was really hard to dry. It just didn't work. It just, as much as I loved the idea of it. So I literally had to scrap the whole thing and come at it at a different way. Had to get new nutrition facts, new bags, new everything. Because I was like, it was really inconsistent too. So this process works really well. It's the same every time. I mean, that's kind of the point is, for food manufacturing, you have to do the same thing every time. when I cook at home, my husband's like, this is never the same. And I'm like, because I don't follow a recipe. I just like throw stuff in a pot. Like, no, I never cook the same at home. But at work, we kind of have to. People would be a little bummed if they got something different every time.
Absolutely. And you know how many Iron Chef contestants have been sent home on their risotto? So it is it is not an easy thing to cook.
Yep. Very true. Very true.
So do you think, or is there a meal that you sell that doesn't get the love it deserves?
Well, it's kind of like halfway in our tier is our Cuban rice bowl. I absolutely love it. It's many people's here favorite. I'm not sure if the word Cuban scares people away. There is a little stand. It's called, I forgot its name. It's just right down at the Kittery Traffic Circle. And they have all kinds of rice bowls. It's a Cuban. And so they have this Cuban rice bowl with a garlic crema sauce that I'm like, this is so delicious. I got it. And I just tried to recreate that. And that's actually my favorite thing, is to get something at a restaurant and be like, oh my God, this would be a great good to go meal. So I feel like the Cuban rice bowl probably doesn't get enough love. Because if you try it, you're like, oh my God, this is delicious. And I mean, we've put it in tortillas. I've scrambled eggs and had it with like that in like tortillas for breakfast. So it is delicious and doesn't see enough love.
All right. To the listeners, I am going to buy one of those meals and I'm going to give an update of probably how wonderful it's going to be, just so we can show it some love.
Awesome. Thank you.
So one thing I've learned, personal friends with Trekker Joe's, he's up in Austin, Texas, making outdoor gear, Trail Brush, Andrew, Ben at Hilltop Packs, you know, gear makers. And even though they have a product that's on the market, they're always looking to take customer feedback, improve, you know, stitching, or, hey, you know, the wear patterns for this is whatever, and, you know, we need to improve it. When you have a meal that's out and you've perfected it, do you ever have to, or do you, I mean, is it just kind of part of the thing to ever revisit? And if so, is it based on feedback or, you know, what dictates that?
So I explained the risotto. I believe that it needed to be fixed and it was. Mm-hmm. There's subjective feedback that this is too spicy, I don't like the flavor. If it's a resounding that, I don't think it would even get into production. But we've never had so much feedback as like, this is horrible. And we ended up discontinuing 4 meals recently. We're a small manufacturer, and I think we were up to 19 different meals, and between the doubles and singles, 35 SKUs, it was impossible. So we shrunk our line, and the things that I shrunk were not necessarily did we get bad feedback on, but it was like, it just wasn't like favorite. We actually are discontinuing the kale, and people, I remember Trail Days, were like, oh my God, I love the kale. And I'm like, well, you eat it now, because it's going away. So I think, yes, we definitely listen to people, and it's really important to also see trends and see what people want more of. So I feel like, you know, I've listened. I know people want more protein. So our last 2 meals are the peanut chicken salad and the white bean chicken chili. And this next year, we're coming out with 3 new meals that all have more protein. I think there's I'm trying to figure out that good ratio of like calorie to protein, how much protein, you know, I want really packed with protein. I'm not like denouncing the calories, but I think for hiking and backpacking, it's not about calories as much as it is about like a protein packed calorie. So that's right. What I'm focusing on. And that's the feedback that we've gotten, that I'm like, okay, I hear you. I know that we have fans. We could get more people that would become fans of Good to Go if I hit certain targets. So yeah, that feedback is really important. And I get that from, you know, our customer service will relay anything that I need to know for development.
It's like the comments I get from my wife whenever I cook. It's too spicy. And I just say, too bad.
You're in Texas.
Exactly. Well, she's from Louisiana. So,
Louisiana can be spicy as hell.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. I guess
I am definitely, I like spice. So I have to, when we try, you know, everybody sits down here, like everybody's got to give their opinion. I do a lot of like questionnaires where you just have to circle something. So you're not going to offend me if you, you know, some people are very shy, like, oh, it's great, Jen. And then I'm sure they're like, ah.
Hey, honesty, tell them honesty.
Absolutely.
So I like this question. Have you ever been on trail with friends, family, or maybe even just stumbled upon people that were camping and actually saw what they were cooking from scratch? And you're like, whoa, that might be a good meal. We're good to go.
Oh, man. You know, honestly, I was that crazy person. When I do two nights, I was the crazy person. I mean, I brought in steak tips with green beans and mashed potatoes.
Ooh.
Yeah. I marinated the steak tips and then cryovac'd them. I pre-cooked the beans, made the mashed potatoes, and it was fall hiking, so it wasn't going to get hot. So yeah, I must say, I might be sounding kind of pompous, but I'm the one that people are like, what are you making? And I'm like...
Can we come over here and camp too?
Can we try? So, nice. Yeah. Sorry.
No. I think we touched on it a little bit, but, you know, I feel that Good to Go has built a strong connection with the hiking and through hiker community. You can see it through your social media. I can see it when I go out on trail, the meals that people are cooking. How do you stay in touch with the community?
Well, we do a lot of, since COVID, the events have dialed down a little bit. Some are coming back, but we love to participate in, customer facing events like PCT days or trail days down in Damascus. I went for the first time. My husband used to always be the one that went, and I went for the first time last year, which was really fun just to kind of just see the through hikers come through and be all excited about Good to Go. Cause I am a little bit shy and kind of here in the office a lot. So when we get out and I'm always like, you know, Good to Go. Yeah. I'm like, wow, that's cool. I'm glad you know it and you like it. So events like that, obviously through social media collaborations, Kristen, like I mentioned before, who does our social media, she might do a collaboration with either some hikers and some even trade shows. A lot of the hikers still will go to the trade shows, so we'll see people. So there is a lot of communication. And the great thing about social media and the interweb, right, you know, you can just reach directly out to a company and let them know your thoughts. And I think that's really important. So, and like I said, everything that I need to know is always forwarded on to me. So I will look at customer service emails daily to make sure that, you know, if it's something that I need to answer or I can help her out, I do.
I've never made anything or had people talking about anything that I do, but you know, like you're at trail days or, you know, you see people buying your product or maybe you're in line and they don't know you and they're talking about your product. I had Andrew with Trail Brush on and he was at trail days one time and people behind him, they were bragging about the trail brush. And he was just like, you could see like in the interview, his eyes kind of light up. And to him telling me this story, like of how special.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think for you all, the impact that you have on our community in a positive way has got to be pretty spectacular. And, you know, I don't know, really understand. And maybe it's through the community communication stuff that you really see this impact, but it's, you know, it's awesome. Like, and so.
Yeah. I have to say, like, Trail Days, because I'd done more trade show events. There's a show outdoor retailer I would go, but that's all for the trade, this event. And, you know, I've done smaller stuff around here, like we'll support races and do that. But especially in the beginning, nobody even knew who we are. They're like, oh, this is great. What is this? What camping food? What do you do? You know, they didn't understand the whole thing. But yeah, but once, you know, when I went to Trail Days, it was like, oh my God, these are my people. And this is, you know, we are serving this whole community and they love it. And stuff that, you know, we have our new stove-free line, which is, we have a chot salad, and which is a cucumber chot salad, which is pretty unique and different, but I wanted something fresh and crisp when I'm hiking and not have to have a stove. And people were like, oh my God, I get that all the time. I love it. And I was like, wow, okay, cool. You know, that's the whole like when people would call and say, is this good for cold soak? And I would say, no, like we didn't develop it. It should be, and certain things need, like the risotto needs boiling water for it to get creamy. So it was kind of fun to do that and have that community be like, I'm cooking for you. Like I'm doing this. You can just add tap water. You don't have to worry about having a stove, because I hear you want that and it's developed that way. So it's just not like hot food soaking.
But, and also, and you probably know this because, you know, you get out in the outdoors, but how motivating is it? You have a 15 mile day, 3,000 feet of elevation gain. And you know, when I get to camp, I'm going to have that mushroom risotto or that pad thai. Like that's helps. That's a motivating factor to just push through the type 2 fun and and get there.
I love that. Type 2 fun. Yep. When you're like, you know, you're not there and every summit is a false summit and you're like,
oh, don't even
Christ, when I'm going to get there. And, yeah, so it is definitely, it's fun to have that. And I feel like we always bring out the favorites so that they're at two of each, like my husband and I, so that neither of us, like the risotto fight, no one has the fight.
debate. Cause John's going to be listening. The debate.
That is the debate. Whereas, you know, just so we are two risotto, whatever, two pad thai, two, just so that it's, you can choose whatever you want without having to debate over it. Actually, it's really funny because sometimes, you know, I don't keep that much stuff at home. But if I'm using something, and I remember every once in a while, you know, I'll be like, oh, I'm like, oh God, why didn't I grab any good to go? Oh, I'm such an idiot. And my husband's like, I know these people and they own a dehydrated food company. Like, oh, shut up.
That's awesome. If you look at your impact, your footprint in the community, what are some of the things that Good to Go are involved in or passionate about?
Well, I think for me, one of the most important things is preservation of our public spaces. We're a member of the Conservation Alliance, and keeping, you know, wild spaces wild is really important. And you can see how things get kind of gobbled up and developed and you know, you just can't get back to wild. So as much as I understand development and I understand that, you know, everybody deserves a place to live, there are places that just should be left pristine and alone. So when you go in, you see how it was hundreds, thousands of years ago. So I think that's probably the most important thing.
Preach.
And I mean, and doing, you know, trail maintenance and stuff like that, you know, keeping, I mean, even not formally, but my husband is, I mean, we never go on a trail where he's not moving things off the trail, or he leaves it better than when he found it. I mean, if he could, try to hike with his chainsaw and take out trees on the way. I'd hike with the clippers and he would hike with a chainsaw to get the down trees out of the way. So, yeah.
How far are you guys from the Appalachian Trail?
It goes up through Mass, and then so probably the first part of the Appalachian Trail would probably be like 70 miles.
Okay.
Maybe a little closer. I mean, because it starts or ends depending on what direction you go to at Katahdin, but that's a good 4 or 5 hour. I mean, back roads getting there, so it's right. A good 5 hour drive, I think, from us. But we can get to the Whites in 90 minutes, and you know the AT is goes right through the White Mountains. So it's it's my friend has a house in Kent, Connecticut, and it goes right through Kent, Connecticut. So it's, you know, it kind of snakes along the East Coast, which is kind of fun to see that all over the place and be like, oh my God, the AT's here too. I actually have an AT map. I'm looking at it across the way, so I could probably, yeah, it's the Whites is the closest for us. So yeah.
Wow. And speaking of that area, I like to brag a little bit. We had a ranger at Guadalupe Mountain National Park named Pam Bells. And if that name rings a bell, the movie Infinite Storm was based off one of her rescues.
Wow. And, okay, that's cool.
So always knew her as Ranger Pam. So for the years, I always found her. And she just finally left the park. I don't know. She was there probably 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. She summited the highest peak in Texas over 300 times, saved countless people, you know, with injuries. So I think her background is in nursing, but you know, she's out on the trails, wrapping ankles, giving water, and always know her as Ranger Pam, and had no idea who she was. And, you know, hey, have you seen a mountain lion? Cause that's a bucket list item that I want. So we would talk about bucket list items and this sort of thing. And, you know, where the mountain lions were. And then also she's involved in all the fatalities and rescues in the park, or was. So I'm not a morbid person, but I love hearing these stories because you learn a lot, like what mistakes were made and you know, learning from them. So you kind of get what happened that's not in the news articles and stuff. And one day we were out there right at the trailhead of Guadalupe Peak, just talking. And she's telling me, I was asking her, you know, all these rescues that she's been involved with. And she's telling me about one. And I'm like, that sounds like that movie. And I can't think of the name. Oh, Infinite Storm. And she grabs her name badge and she just kind of turns it over to me. And I'm like, you're Pam Bells. And she's just laughing. And, you know, I don't care about movie stars or athletes or right. any of that stuff, but oh, I was geeked out. So we had to do ussies. And she texted me about maybe 2 months ago saying that she's finally leaving the park and probably going to retire. And she was heading up to her daughter. I guess her daughter lives in Colorado Springs, mm-hmm. and then heading back to New Hampshire where all this kind of kicked off for her. And, just about a week ago, she sent me a text and she goes, just out here cowboy camping. She's out in the middle of nowhere, cowboy camping, you know, just living her best life. So that was it's just so awesome to have someone like that at, you know, Texas. You don't think of a hiking or backpacking destination, but we have some pretty amazing spots. And to know that she was there was really cool for me.
That's so cool. Yeah, I have to say, he is not a Pam Bells, but my husband is definitely, he was the one who taught me about, I was a city slicker. I lived mm-hmm. in New York City. And I was commuting from the city to here. And when he showed me how, you know, to backpack, I owned a sleeping bag and that was it. And we went to the store and he got me a pack, showed me how to fit it. And then we went home and he showed me, he laid down all my stuff and he's like, and this is how you pack it. And this is before Hyperlite stuff came out. Right. So, I mean, my pack was like 50 pounds when we went out for a week. And he was like, and this is, you wanted to sit here. And, He was the best teacher because he had been a wilderness like first responder. He was a, like so many different things. He's a registered nurse. He works in ER. So I always go out with a Boy Scout, which even like we'll go for something, and he's like, and I'm like, oh, I forgot, you know, I forgot my base layer. Like, meaning it's a day hike, and he's like, you know, Jen, if you were in the woods overnight, you would be freezing. Da, da, da. You can't forget like everything. And I'm like, okay, okay. I'm like, I just wanted to pack light, and he's like, or dead.
Oh, I like that. Pack light or dead. I love it.
So I'm like, all right, you're right, you're right.
My hiking and backpacking partner on usually all the adventures, Henning, he always yells at me because I refuse to pack a shell. And I refused to pack a shell until I actually packed a shell and realized how spectacular it was. And so,
because it's light and then you want to get warm quickly. You know, you're already sweating. So then you get to a summit, but then you stop and you're freezing and you put on a shell. You're like, oh, wow, this is so easy. Yeah. And it packed very small.
Yes. And I don't let him know how delightful I'm feeling. I still act like it's because I can't let him know that he was right. Yeah. So does Good to Go ever surprise hikers out on the trail with samples or meetups at trailheads?
My husband does. It's still to this day. He'll we'll go out and he'll put like, I don't know, 4 or 5 meals in his pack or in his, you know, jacket. And although he is kind of discerning, like you have to be worthy. It's just not like, hi, do you like food? Here, try this. Like if you see someone like doing some sort of trail maintenance or being mm-hmm. exceptionally friendly or like yeah. following the uphill hiker rule, all those, he'll be like, oh, okay, they deserve this.
Nice.
So if you're really, if you're doing, you know, a good job on a trail or being very caring, you'll see me, I'm 5'4", and my 6'3" husband, who's quite burly and very handsome, be nice to him and you will probably get some free food.
So, yeah. So if some strange person walks up to you and hands you a Good to Go meal, you're doing what's right by the trails, etiquette and all that.
It's like a little medal. It's like you are doing the right thing.
Nice. So I like this question. What has surprised you most about the hiking and backpacking community as it's embraced your meals?
What has surprised me the most?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think in the beginning, you know, when we started, it was really surprising that people were so excited about unique and different meals. You know, now there's, like I said, there's 30 companies that you can find unique and different meals everywhere. But I think when we started, it was you know, people were like, why didn't I think of this? Like, why didn't I do this? So it was that recognition of being kind of the first mover in a category that was really exciting for me. And it made me feel special. Like, okay, cool. Because it's also a community that I was very new to. It wasn't like I'd been out there for 10 years and being like, why do I keep eating this food? It's like, it took me like 2 overnights to be like, this stuff's crap. I'm making my own.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, like I would definitely consider you and Good to Go as trailblazers in this, you know, facilitating the excitement and all these new different types of meals. How does that make you feel to know, like, I don't know that anybody can argue the fact that you were not the catalyst for all this.
Well, it's kind of funny because I'll see like people's stories. They're like, oh, the food was so horrible. And I'm a chef and I started creating this. And I'm like, that's my story, but that was 11 years ago. So, okay, cool. You know, uh-huh. But, yeah, I mean, everybody has their own stories and unique and wonderful as they are. I do feel that, yes, we were probably probably the first to get such national distribution. So maybe that was it. And also, we wanted to be nationally distributed. There are some companies that, you know, are smaller and are happy with their smaller footprint. So I think that it just depends. You know, for me, it was like, I being in restaurants, there's your footprint. I had a tiny little restaurant, 13 tables. That's all I did. Mm. Whereas this is like, oh my God, we're in Alaska. We're in Hawaii. We're here. You know, it's like, we're all over the country. So that is exciting for me.
Nice. So as we kind of start to close, got a few more questions to kind of get the answers to. Are there any new meals or product ideas or directions that you're excited about?
Yeah. So I have three new meals that I'm coming out with and we'll be releasing in January. All of those are focusing more on protein. So we have a cowboy casserole, which is, do you know what cowboy casserole is?
No, I do not.
I did not either. Although I saw somewhere online, like it's the words. And I was like,
right.
Casserole. What the? So now I've been making cowboy casserole over and over, a million different recipes, and be like, what works, what doesn't work. But it's usually ground beef or diced beef. There's potatoes in there. So it's a little bit more stick to your ribs, but it's going to clearly come with the good to go, kind of style. So that, and you know,
nice.
There's a couple other things that I'm going to keep that a little bit more secret, but yeah, so it is really answering that need that I've heard from hikers of more protein, you know, a little bit more calories, and we're going to address that.
All right. So I'm going to pitch you an idea.
Okay. This is it. Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. So I'm going to see how you respond.
Okay.
So just imagine you're walking up to a display of good to go and you have all these beautiful colors organized spectacularly. And in the center, you have three or four little sections of red, white, and blue.
Okay.
And in the center of each of these packages, there's the Lone Star, the white Lone Star. And the meal is, there's two versions, with beans or without.
Uh-huh.
Trailblazing Texas chili.
Okay.
With beans or without.
What makes, you have to tell me what's the ingredients in Texas
chili? I'll let you know.
You don't have them on the top of your head?
No.
Fair. You can't be like, oh, here's a recipe. I don't really know what goes in it.
No. I cook it, but yeah, I mean, on the spot, I would definitely have to get ingredients.
I'm tripping you up. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm up for it. But
the packaging, red, white, and blue, the center of the packaging, the white Texas star. I mean,
all right.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. I don't know if that Justin's pretty, that might not fly with him, but I mean, that's like I said, that I sometimes, in my position, I have decision fatigue and I just go with whoever says, this is what we need to do, Jen. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay.
Right. And then you cover all the Texas hiker and backpackers. You give it option with beans or without, because there's a big debate on does beans go into Texas chili.
And is it like 50-50? Like
I think the purest. So the people from Texas that say no beans, the people that have migrated to Texas, but then they call themselves Texans, they add beans. So
okay. What then is the bulk of it just meat and like meat with, mm-hmm. Do you have any other like starch in there or corn or like what else is
no,
in there?
Just meat and
big bowl of meat.
Well, chili, like, you know, chili. I'll get you some recipes. You can check them out.
Yeah. You got to forward me some recipes so I can look at this. Cause I think speaking of a lot of protein. Yeah. There you are. Texas.
There you go.
Right at you. See, then tomatoes and meat. To come to Texas and go to like a dozen different restaurants or people's homes that are really exceptional cooks. yep. and be like, make me your Texas chili. I need to try it. So, because that's what I do. If I get something that's like the pad thai or the pho that's, you know, in restaurants, I'll go try it a bunch of different places so that I'm like, I like this about it. So I guess I've got another trip to Texas coming up.
Oh yeah, and absolutely, you got to hit the trails. So if you're heading out, let me know. We have some amazing trails, destinations, national parks that you definitely don't get in the upper East Coast for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So one thing I noticed, and we've talked about it before, is with Good to Go, it's authentic. And so what advice would you give to other small outdoor brands that are trying to build something?
I think when you said authentic, it's, you know, believe in yourself. I think sometimes things can get when you have a lot of outside opinions, your direction can waver. But if you feel strongly in what, and you get feedback, obviously, if you feel strongly and people are like, but I hate it, that's not going to work. But if you feel strongly mm-hmm. about what you're doing, there's a degree of, you know, mentorship and advisors that are helpful. But at some point you have to like go back to like, why did I do this? Why do people like this? And stick to your guns, you know. Also, I think it is a degree of trying to be unique, because there's, you know, everything, and you're going to get copied. I mean, we've gotten ripped off. It just yeah. happens. But, you know, stick with your integrity and what you do. And most importantly, ask a lot of questions.
Nice. Love it. All right. Last two questions. If you could pin one message on a trail marker or trailhead for future hikers and backpackers, what would it say?
You know, most important for me is, you know, leave no trace, leave it as beautiful as you found it. this drives my husband bonkers. His sign, because I'd be like, leave no trace, you know, take only pictures, something stupid like that. My husband would say, pick up your fucking toilet paper.
Or your orange pills.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
What was his other saying? Pack to die? Oh.
Pack it in or die.
Yeah, that's right. Pack it in or die. I love it. All right, you ready for the last question?
Sure.
It is my absolute favorite question that I've ever asked on a podcast. If you could step back from this Good to Go journey and just kind of take it in its entirety, what is one message that you would give to everyone that has believed in you or supported you along the way?
It would be, I didn't do this alone. Yeah. It would be all the people here. And I'm like getting teary. I couldn't have done it alone. A great team. Great team.
Golly. Yeah. And I, you know, that, it's my favorite question. It means a lot to hear the response and, that's how you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, I mean, I have two people that have been here for 10 years. We've been in business for 11, you know? I mean, it means a lot. And I you know, we don't have a normal office. You can bring your dog into work. You can bring your grandson into work. You can make it work. You know, I do not micromanage. I'm like, just get your work done. If you need to run out, if you need to do this, just... So I think we have a very, very loving and dedicated staff, and I'm truly, truly blessed for that reason. Yeah.
Awesome. Love it. Well, that wraps up the episode. Jen, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I know you all are busy for coming on the podcast, and it's been, I don't know that I've ever had so much fun on a podcast. It's been, it's been awesome.
That's my game. Make them laugh. So I'll leave you with this. The way at the restaurant, I had a server who's like, how do you get away from some of those tables? They just talk and talk. And I was like, you tell them a joke, they laugh, and you kind of, that's your exit.
All right. So what's the joke?
Leave them with it's always the spur of like, you know, it's an off the cuff thing. So, but yeah. So thank you so much. I had a great time, Jason. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you, the time you're making for this and helping me through it. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.